The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC here on ESPN Plus. I'm Dan Thomas. What a bonkers day. It seemed wherever you looked, there were storylines. In Spain, later on with Ali, we'll be discussing the fact that both Real Madrid and Barcelona lost. Meanwhile, in Italy, AC Milan remained top of the table after a 2-1 victory over Inter. Zlatan, very much the star of the show. Jan will be joining us a little later on as well to talk about an easy victory for Bayern in the end and Borussia Dortmund's impressive win against Hoffenheim. Also, we've got highlights of the Old Firm Derby. Remember, the Scottish Premiership now available here on ESPN+. But we'll start in the Premier League. And we start, unfortunately, with kind of the rubbish part of what happened today. It finished Everton 2, Liverpool 2 in what was an incredible Merseyside derby as we welcome in Frank Leboeuf and Shagun Hislop. Big picture, the big talking point from that game is the fact that Virgil van Dijk goes off injured early. There are reports as we go to air that it's an ACL injury. They have not been substantiated yet by the club, but it looks like he could be out for a long time. Frank, is it as simple as saying if van Dijk is out, Liverpool won't win the league?
Yeah, I'm not too far from there, you know, thinking as you just said, that it's going to be a different aspect. Van Dijk is absolutely important in the dressing room, on the field, you know, his talent, his leadership is absolutely crucial for the Reds. So, yeah, it's going to be different. And now it's going to be a different story. We saw that today, you know, he went out. And Liverpool conceded two goals with big headers. So he wasn't there to save them.
Shaq, it was always going to be difficult for Liverpool, given the fixtures, given what's going on in the Champions League as well. We talked about the fact they needed to avoid injuries, especially to their key man at the back. Same question to you. What does this do for their title defence?
Well, it dents it considerably, but you're asking a lot of Matip and Gomez to step up. Listen, neither of them are Virgil van Dijk, but I think they're both very good centre-backs indeed. No, it's not done just yet. I think that hinges on the fitness of Alisson. You can't afford to lose the best centre-back and best goalkeeper in world football. Alisson stays fit, consistently fit between now and the end of the season. I don't think it lessens Liverpool, but not enough for me to rule them out winning the title just yet.
Let's talk about the challenge that led to Van Dijk getting injured, Jordan Pickford, early on. All eyes were on whether or not it was offside, looking whether or not there's then a penalty. VAR didn't look. Apparently, this is what the official line is, they did not look as to whether or not it was a red card challenge. Shakra, I see you shaking your head.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. I've heard the excuses offered by the Premier League and the Referees Association, PGMOL, or whatever it's called, and nothing stands up. It was just an awful dereliction of duty by whoever was in charge of the VAR and looking at that challenge. Just at the naked eye, just looking at that game in real time, you recognised how awful a challenge it was. If you, as a trained official, see that and the only thing you can think of looking at is whether it's offside or not, whether it's a penalty or not, then I'm sorry. It's a failure on your part that you can't just simply excuse. I'm not accepting it.
Frank?
Of course not. I think it's a straight red card. I mean, I don't want to incriminate Pickford. He tries to get the ball, misses the ball, but it's a real assault towards Van Dijk, and he should be sent off. That's it. And whether it was offside or not, it doesn't mean anything. Because if you say that it's only the offside who counts, you know, it means that after an offside, clear offside, you know, you can punch somebody in the face and it will be nothing. Untrue. The ref will get a red card you. It's the same, completely the same action. It's a straight red card should have been given to Pickford. It happened to Richarlison. He's been sent off, but not on the foul that he made. On the foul that was made just before. And the ref gave a red card to Richarlison. So it's possible to do so because he did it in the second half.
Then VAR, of course, took away what looked like the late winner for Liverpool, Jordan Henderson with a goal, Mane a hair offside. Where do you stand on this, Shaq? There's obviously a lot of people who are feeling that it's just too much.
Yeah, and listen, I have kind of changed my tune on this over the course of the season as well, over the course of last season. I am not in favour of these hairline decisions where you have to draw these rather ridiculous vertical dotted lines, and all of a sudden that's how the offside is given. I understand how the law is given, and it's either you're off or you're on, and there's no in between. But my understanding was that there would be lines drawn rather quickly and a ruling given. I feel that's still the way to go, because when you get down to those minuscule kind of differences, a lot is still determined by human and human error. Where the referee's assistant puts this line exactly where he judges the end of the arm to be, and that's moved over the course of the last couple of months as well. I just feel when you get down to the decisions that small, you're subject to human error and it should be negated.
Frank, haven't we always said that we want consistency from the officials, and we are getting consistency. Even if it's by the millimeter, you know if you're just a hair offside, it's going to be given against you.
Yeah, but that's what it is. And it can be minuscule, it can be a hair, which I don't have anymore. If it's offside, if it's an offside, it's an offside. It's not the interpretation of the referee. I understand what Shaka says. It's true that when do you stop the action, when you start, you know, when the ball leaves the foot, I understand everything. But I think they are very accurate about that. That's maybe the only thing they are pretty much good at. But so when there is an offside, and it was an offside, even if it was maybe 1 inch, well, even half of an inch, it was an offside. So it shouldn't be given.
Argument is, Frank, obviously on the flip side, is that an inch doesn't make a difference. It doesn't mean the player is going to get there any quicker. He doesn't gain any advantage by it.
Yeah, but it's an offside. If the guy is in position of offside, you can discuss about it, because there is at least one thing very clear about it. If the guy is in position of offside, even if it's half of an inch, is offside. So no discussion about that. You can discuss only on what Josh Shaka said. You know, if it was well made and well, how do you say, created, yeah, in the fact that he put it on pause when the ball leaves the foot. That's the only question mark that we have.
Right, away from VAR, let's talk about it.
To that point, sorry, Dan, to that point about gaining an advantage, I don't think that's relevant at all to the law. And keep in mind, I'm against those hairline decisions. And I know we'll talk about Newcastle United against Manchester United. For instance, United scored a goal where Mata's coming back from an offside position. He doesn't gain an advantage coming back that way. So gaining an advantage, I don't think, comes into consideration at all. I just feel it's down to human error and limitations of your technology, that you have to use some common sense at some point when the decision is that small.
If the goal was given, Jordan Henderson's late winner, I don't think many could argue against the fact that Liverpool deserved the win, Frank, because I thought they bounced back well, considering that defeat against Aston Villa, a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, I think they did well. They played well, and they would have deserved to win. And I think, you know, I send you a text, they say that it was today a lucky toffee. And that's what it is, you know, because they had everything with them. And because Pickford should have been sent off, they conceded the goal was offside. Well, everything went well for them, and I'm happy for them. I said before, I think on Thursday, that I think I was seeing a draw, and it's what happened. I mean, they never gave up.
Oh, there you are, Frank. Get that in there. Pat yourself on the back. Well done. Good. Meanwhile.
No.
You just drop it in. Yeah. I said on Thursday it'd be a draw, and it was a draw. There we go. Well done, Frank.
Yes, yeah, but that's true. That's true. That. I'm a visionary.
Yeah.
I'm a visionary.
If you're a visionary, you wouldn't be working
football.
For us.
I know football. No, and I would be a billionaire.
Xhaka, from Everton's perspective, you know, still unbeaten, top of the table.
Yes, still unbeaten, still top of the table, and you get a point against Liverpool after being second best. And we've said this on the show a million times. Good teams know how to pick up points when they don't play well. And that's how Liverpool will be feeling right now. They know that they got very lucky with that decision with Pickford as well. And sometimes you need Lady Luck to shine on you. You can also make the argument that given the good football that we've seen from Everton up to this point, maybe they're deserving of that luck, because their football, again, so far, has been simply outstanding.
Well, that was the start of the day, and you thought a nice appetizer then for the big match between Arsenal and Manchester City. City winning by 1-0, their first home win of the season, Sterling with a goal. Frank, there's really not much to say about this game because nothing much really happened.
Exactly. One goal and that's it. And that's what it is with Manchester City nowadays, you know. I mean, the beginning of Guardiola era was very interesting because he created so much and he kept on doing well. But now I'm bored. I'm fed up. You know when Manchester City starts an action, you can go to the restroom to have a pee and you just come back to, 1 minute after they didn't finish the action because they just passed balls
to
each other.
Yeah, but they won today, Frank. They won and they kept a clean sheet.
Yeah, but... you were asking me if I had something to say. No, there is nothing to say because it's boring. It's boring. We have nothing. They play handball, and normally we should say handball because it was created in Germany. They don't play soccer. They don't play football anymore. They barely shoot at goals. I don't want to see the end of an action. I want a vertical football. I'm fed up with those horizontal passes. I understand the passes on top of the passes. We can create a space. Yeah, okay, it works. Until a certain point, you know, Manchester City didn't go for the Champions League, didn't play a final.
Yeah, but they won today, Frank.
Reach a quarterfinal.
We can only take it from today. And Xhaka, this is a victory that was much needed, considering the fact that the run coming into this, the defeat obviously against Leicester, the draw against Leeds. This is a clean sheet and 3 points. No matter what Frank says, it is a statement from City.
No. Okay, well done. Well, goodbye.
I'm not sure how much of a statement it is given that it was 1-0, but it was a result that was needed. And you're absolutely right. Everything about the result, keeping the clean sheet, scoring against a team that I think will be a much improved Arsenal. They'll be pushing harder at that top four, and to Frank's point, it's City going back to what they do best, keeping the ball, not giving up too many chances. You know that if you press City, they can pass through that pressure, and you'll find yourself on the wrong end of a pretty bad result. Arsenal didn't; they dropped off, they soaked up pressure, but City found a plan B in keeping possession and not allowing Arsenal the ball, as they've done in previous games that you just mentioned, Dan. So from a City perspective, given what we've seen so far this season with their own uncertainties, given how big this upcoming week is, given how big the upcoming couple of weeks are, this is a very good result and one that you build on.
Frank, a quick word on Arsenal.
No, nothing much to say as
no.
well. I mean, I don't understand why Lacazette didn't play when he played William as a nine, as a striker, when you have Lacazette scoring goals and going very well with Aubameyang. I didn't get it. William was invisible in that position. It's not his right position. I didn't get it. That's a question mark that I would ask to Arteta.
Meanwhile, Manchester United with a big victory away against Newcastle. 4-1. Two late goals in this one, sealing the 3 points for Solskjaer and sealing him some more time, Xhaka, because there was a point there in this game that you felt maybe the balance had shifted. Luke Shaw with the own goal early on. You thought, wow, you know, United really need a response here. And to be fair to them, they did.
Yeah, they did. And when that goal goes in offshore, as it does, you think that Lady Luck is working against you. And given results before the international break, you kind of fear for Manchester United. But the one thing we've learned about Newcastle, and particularly Newcastle under Steve Bruce, is that they're going to sit back and allow Manchester United to do with them as they will. And that's exactly what happened. It was a very good response, in the first instance from Maguire, much needed for him. Mm-hmm. And then you had the Bruno Fernandes goal ruled out. And you just wondered. You just wondered if, again, Manchester United, some of their own frailties and maybe some of their own lack of leadership would come back to haunt them. David De Gea was huge in that save from Wilson in particular. He played as well as we've seen him for quite some time. And in the end, as much as it were two late goals, and as much as I can complain about Newcastle United, it was a result that not only was needed for United, but fully deserved.
The critics of Solskjaer would be licking their lips, weren't they, when they went 1-0 down, Frank? But his team responded well for the coach.
Yeah, they've been very serious, and I'm very pleased with Harry Maguire's game, where talked about it with Stevie last week, he went back to the basics, played simple, on top of it, scored the goal, almost scored another one. So he was very professional and very strong in his head. But I'm still scared with Manchester United because they are one player dependent. No, but really, because if Bruno Fernandes is not on the field, what's going to happen to Manchester United? I have to add Rashford because Rashford had a very good game. But really,
but he
it's
is on the field. He is
dependent.
Playing, Frank. Surely you cross that bridge when you come to it. United been rubbish coming to this when 4-1. You can't.
No, hold on, Dan. All done. Have you seen who they played against? I mean, I played against Newcastle when Xhaka was there with David Ginola and some others, but it was a real team with Les Ferdinand and others, where it was a real show to see Newcastle playing at the time. That's awful when we saw. It's kick and rush with nothing. I thought, you know, Steve Bruce is a former Manchester United centre-half, and I say, well, they paid him or what? Because I saw nothing from Newcastle. Really, I saw nothing. So it's okay, you know, they bounded very well back, you know, Manchester United. And I'm just wondering, if Bruno Fernandes is not on the field, what's going to happen to Manchester United? That's just a question. Well done to them. They did very well today. They were very serious. I'm happy for Harry Maguire, even for De Gea. But I have that question. When I see Bruno Fernandes, I see that guy doing everything for that team.
ESPN FC would like to distance themselves from comments made from Frank Leboeuf suggesting bribery to Steve Bruce. Let's finish, shall we, by looking at Chelsea's 3-3 draw against Southampton. Oh. Same old Chelsea. Right. You know, you're 3-1 up and you think, right, OK, despite the fact that Ings scored, you're going to get yourself over the line to get the 3 points. But in the end, it was Chelsea hanging on, Frank.
Yeah, and I'm going to show to the viewers that I'm very fair. And that is not because Chelsea was my former club that I'm going to be blind. I'm not convinced at all about Chelsea right now. I don't know where they go. Well, there are players coming back, Pulisic, Ziyech, and Thiago Silva was in there. The goalkeeper, sorry, I forgot his name.
Kepa.
It wasn't there. Kepa played. So it was a problem. They made mistakes, but I'm not convinced at all. The way they play, they're very slow. They don't show. It's not entertaining. It's like they don't know each other. They're not fit enough. I'm very worried about my former club. Really, I'm really worried. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt because I don't know what they're worth. But really, if they keep on going like that, for sure they're not going to finish in the first fourth place. For sure for me.
I think to that point, Frank, I think the issues with Chelsea come from the back. And I know defensively is a whole other discussion. But when you have the likes of Werner, who is fantastic today, Havertz, who I think will continue to improve. You've got Pulisic, you've got Mount on the park. As good as Chelsea are going forward, when you have growing concerns about how good you are defensively, invariably, I think you start to see your attacking lines drop deeper and deeper because they all feel that they have a role to play in protecting that back four. In terms of talent, on paper, and for a lot of what we saw on show against Southampton, Chelsea are simply outstanding going forward. Can be outstanding going forward, and I think you're starting to see this team taking shape. Werner playing as the number 10, I think simply outstanding. Havertz will continue to get better. I've spoke about Mount, Pulisic, Jorginho, Kante, but then when you have Christensen go walk about for the first goal as he did, don't ask me what Zuma was doing for the second. Kepa again could have done better in terms of his own contribution
on that point,
to that Shaka, second
did,
goal.
Did Kepa wimp out of that challenge?
I think he caught himself in two minds. One, you will invariably find yourself in no man's land because you're positioned for the back pass, and then Zuma does what he does. But then you have to make a decision. Either you stand back and play for the shot and try to deal with that, or you commit. And if you commit, either you get to the man. I have no problem with if you find yourself just short of maybe using your feet to tackle, use your hands. Give away the indirect free kick. That's the lesser of the two evils here. But to kind of go, then go with your feet and realize, hold on, maybe I'm not getting there. I should have gone with my hands and not use your hands. It's nothing. It's a nothingness, and that's what Kepa left himself exposed, and where the goal eventually came from, despite the best efforts of Christensen. Zuma at fault, but Kepa could and should have done better.
Frank, you used the point. You said they're not fit and they don't know each other. Both are probably quite accurate, given the number of new faces that have joined Chelsea in the summer. But the games keep coming thick and fast, so how do you handle this?
Well, you just pray, you know, and you make sure that your player is going to work hard, you know, physically every day, you know, to be fit for the weekend. And Ziyech, of course, has to work very hard. We saw him coming in, and we can see that he's out of shape. Pulisic, of course, is not he's not who he was before. I'm not convinced about Havertz. You know, Xhaka seems to be optimistic. I'm not that optimistic. I'm very pleased with Werner. Werner is a real satisfaction. And it's true. It's true that the fact that we can be sure with the defense, I understand that the block has to drop a little bit to ensure the problems. But I don't know. Thiago Silva should have been back. I don't know what happened, but he should have been back and play, because it's crucial for Chelsea to have a real leader at the back. And that's the main problem. But so they all have to work hard physically to make sure they can play together and they can be stronger together. But they don't seem to be strong.
Gentlemen, as always, thank you very much. So as I mentioned, Everton, top of the table then, 3 points clear of Liverpool. Aston Villa, meanwhile, of course, are in action later this week. They've got two games in hand. Win those, they're top of the tree. Arsenal fifth, Chelsea remaining sixth.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tell you what, four compelling matches in Italy today. We'll start with the Milan derby as AC Milan become the only team with a 100% record in Serie A after beating Inter by 2-1. Gab Marcotti joins us. And Gab, it had to be Zlatan Ibrahimovic. You got both of those goals for AC Milan.
Yeah, Dan, not only did he get both of those goals, and by the way, he very much got both of those goals, because on the first one, he won the penalty off of Kolarov, turning him inside out, drawing the foul. Then he had his penalty saved by Handanovic. By the way, Handanovic has now saved 37% of the penalties he's faced in Serie A throughout his career. But then he still obviously sticks home the rebound. On the second one, he peels away from his marker beautifully at the far post. But, you know, Dan, beyond the goals, it was just a tremendous performance from a guy who only received the all clear, only tested negative for COVID to confirm his recovery. That was just 8 days ago. He goes out there, 39 years of age. He kept going until the very end. And it was just a stellar performance from him. And, you know, to celebrate afterwards, he tweeted a picture of a bruised and bloodied lion on his social media accounts, which pretty much sums him up.
Four wins out of four, Gab. How excited should Milan fans be?
I think they should be excited because beyond Zlatan, I know people are going to crack jokes. Oh, look, he's 39 years of age. But, you know, he did this against Inter, who, for better or worse, did reach the Europa League final last year. But all around him, Dan, is so much young talent, whether it's Kessié and Bennacer in midfield and Tonali, who came on, whether it's Salamakers, Theo Hernandez, Rafael Leao, who set up the cross for Zlatan second. You know, it doesn't really matter if Zlatan obviously isn't as quick as he once was, although he was never lightning quick, because there's enough quickness around him in the team. Everything looks positive. I think at some point, they're going to have to wean themselves off of Zlatan. That day, though, isn't today because Zlatan is still clearly contributing, but they're ready. And I think it's important to give credit to the way this team's been constructed thus far and the way they've taken on this game.
You mentioned young, exciting, dynamic players for Milan. Meanwhile, Inter go with Kolarov at the back.
Yeah, Kolarov in central defense, not something that quite worked out. I mean, look, I get the argument if you play him at left wing back, then, you know, you're going to have an issue because he's not going to be able to get up and down the flanks, which is mandatory in a Conte team. Now, equally, you might say that Ivan Perisic can't really do that as effectively because he's a winger, not a wing back. But that's a whole other issue. Like, Inter, first of all, this first 45 minutes of this game were completely pulsating. Inter created chances as well. Lukaku had a tremendous performance, only missing the finish, really tried to carry his team. But there's obviously issues there. And look, it's not just Kolarov. I think Inter were probably a little bit sloppy in the middle of the park. They still haven't had their flank sorted out. But I think we have to give credit for Milan for the way they played in the first half and for the intensity they showed in the second half in defending that lead.
How much responsibility should Conte take for this defeat, Gab?
Look, I think every single time this season that Inter don't take all 3 points, at least in Serie A, questions will be asked of Conte because he got the guys he wanted. He is the guy who wanted, you know, Arturo Vidal. He wanted the freedom to bench Eriksen, which he did, and then he brought him on later. So inevitably, he's going to come under scrutiny. He said that Inter created the better chances after the game. I'm not sure that that's true, but they certainly created chances. It wouldn't have been scandalous if they had equalized. But equally, you know, you're out there, and at the start of the season, most people thought that it would have been Inter dictating to Milan. The fact of the matter is, you know, you're playing a team which is a 39-year-old center forward, and you end up giving him the matchup, the one matchup at the back that he most wanted, which was against Kolarov, who is about as old as he is, and not a natural central defender. And I think you have to ask questions there.
Elsewhere, we saw Crotone pick up their first point of the campaign against Juventus. 1-1 match. Juventus down to 10 men. Chiesa getting sent off in the second half. Alvaro Morata thought he'd scored the winner. But we talked about VAR earlier on in the show. VAR playing its part in this as well. Just offside.
Just offside again. Not dissimilar in the sense that it was, it really was basically like his heel that was offside. Earlier, Morata had a tremendous chance which came off the post and somehow didn't go in. I have to say this, obviously no Cristiano, no Dybala, he played a bunch of young players, he played Portanova, a debutant, Frabotta, who starting the second game of the season was a left back, he chucked Chiesa in there, So, you know, it was a younger team. It was a Juve side with a lot of the veterans missing. I'm probably were a little bit unlucky to be dropping the points on the balance of the way the game went. But equally, you know, Pirlo's going to view this as an opportunity to grow. He blooded the youngsters. He is trying to go in a different direction with this team. Maybe the 1-1, you don't want to take anything away from Crotone, but I think Juve will feel a little bit hard done by.
Yeah, it wasn't a red, was it, either, for Chiesa? I thought that was harsh.
I thought he left his foot in. You know what? Those are the ones where, you know, the commentator on the feed I was watching, and then I switched it off because I got annoyed, was saying, well, look, you know, that was debatable whether it's even a foul. You know, and I'm like, come on, man. You know, the 1930s are over. Like, I think the reality is Chiesa has so much exuberance, so much so much intensity. He wanted, he started well, obviously, setting up Morata's goal. And I think he tried to do too much, and he got a little bit carried away. And if it wasn't a red, it might have been a yellow. So, yeah, I think Juve are going to be annoyed in this game. But again, I think we have to give, you got to give credit to Crotone as well. This is a newly promoted side, a side with very few household names, except for the poor man's Andrea Pirlo, Luca Cigarini in the middle of the park. And they got a point off the champions.
Let's move on, shall we, to Napoli against Atalanta. Let's not forget, Atalanta were 100% coming into this clash. So, of course, they'll be 4-0 down at halftime, Gab.
This is the world of Atalanta, right? Now, the joke is that, you know, maybe Napoli didn't travel to Turin last week to take on Juve because they wanted to have mercy on Juve because they're that unstoppable. No, look, Napoli are firing on all cylinders. We've got to give credit to Chucky Lozano grabbing the two goals. Osimhen, once again, absolutely devastating center forward play from him. Atalanta, I think, gave up the goals that you expect Atalanta to give up when they gamble so much. But we never quite saw the comeback in the second half. And we didn't see it also because Napoli are a very, very complete team, which became, I think, even better rounded now with Bakayoko in there in the middle of the park.
So what does that say about the possibility of being title contenders, Gab?
You know, I wouldn't have had Napoli up there at the start of the season, but now when you chuck Bakayoko in the mix, when you consider the fact that Koulibaly stuck around, and when you consider the impact that Osimhen's had, when you consider the fact that Gattuso seems to have revived Chucky Lozano's career, that he's playing with no fear, because, you know, playing Osimhen, you know, in front of Lozano, Mertens and Insigne, something people thought, you know, was just untenable, that Gattuso would never do. You know, you're really starting to wonder. It's a bit of a wacky season. Look, if Milan are going to be title contenders, why shouldn't Napoli be?
Finally, Gab, a team that I think we can safely say, certainly off the back of how they start the season, will not be title contenders. Lazio losing 3-0 against Sampdoria. This was a terrible performance from them.
A bad, bad performance. And, you know, when you, obviously, there was no Ciro Immobile suspended from before the break, although if you saw his finishing midweek, you might wonder, you know, you might wonder whether it was even a bad thing. Now, joking aside, Sampdoria basically exploited every single mistake that Lazio made. And I think these are the games that Lazio have to navigate. These are the one games where they have to show that they are the more mature team because, you know, they had, other than Immobile, they had many of their big guns in there. You know, Milinkovic-Savic was there, Lucas Leiva was there, Luis Alberto was there, Correa. So, you know, you expect in those situations, you expect them to be able to control the game, you know, against, I think, on paper, certainly an overmatched opponent in Sampdoria. But, you know, the old Fox Agnelli doing it again, and it's a heavy, heavy defeat for Lazio.
Yeah, Lazio down 11th in the table. Thank you very much, Gab Marcotti. Meanwhile, at the top end, as I mentioned, at Milan, sit top of the tree, 100% record, 4 wins out of 4. Atalanta in second, Napoli above Juventus after Juve dropping those points against Crotone. And coverage continues tomorrow from Italy. We've got 5 matches for you. All starts with Bologna against Sassuolo. That's the early kickoff on ESPN+. The late game, Roma against Benevento, live on ESPN at 2:30. And then on Monday, Hellas Verona against Genoa, live on Plus as well.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Meanwhile, in the Bundesliga, no problem. For Bayern Munich, a comfortable 4-1 victory away against new boys Bielefelder. Yanar Fjortoff is with us. Jan, on a day full of surprises, Bayern couldn't give us another one.
They couldn't. I mean, we hope there's going to be excitement in the Bundesliga. Still, Dortmund and Leipzig, they will be around. But Bayern Munich, again, is that winning culture. And then these two boys up front with Müller, Lewandowski. I mean, we're talking a lot about Müller's assistants. I guess he's one away from 150 or something in the Bundesliga. And Lewandowski scoring for fun all the time. But, I mean, we can swap those roles. I mean, that cross from Lewandowski to one of the goals of Müller today, it was just excellent. That was David Beckham stuff. They are so perfect footballers. And Bayern Munich is just flying like they've been for a long, long time now.
Jan, I imagine Jürgen Love would not have enjoyed watching this and watching this sort of performance from Thomas Müller.
Well, and if you see the German national team at the moment, it's so boring. I mean, thank God there are no supporters in the stadium because they would be bored to death. And can you imagine that they got a defense who is terrible and they can't organize it. And you can even make a case with Mats Hummels going in there to organize them. But Thomas Müller, he's one of the best players in the world. And I know people saying now he's not because this and that. No, just because he doesn't look like a superstar, it makes him still a superstar. And Joachim Löw, stay with his principle. Just keep going with your principle, Joachim Löw, because you will be fired in the summer. Mm. If you survive before the Euro coming up, I'll be happy for you because this is so boring. And if you don't take the best players, one of the best players in the world in there, you need to be blamed.
Jan, is that an opinion that's shared by most Germans?
I think they slowly start getting in there. I mean, Joachim Löw, he reacted very, very vulnerable when Lothar Matthäus said, I will never pay to watch that team. And I can understand that the TV rating go down on that team. And Joachim Löw tried then first to be arrogant. And then he thought, well, there was some PR people saying, that was not good of you. I mean, Lothar Matthäus has been a bit around and slowly is getting in there. Because if this keeps going, I mean, you have so many exciting players. But Bayern show that, Dortmund also show that you need also some old heads in there to kind of organize it, to kind of find a right balance in the team. So I'm not predicting that he will be fired because the Germans don't usually do that. But after the Euro, I can see him leaving.
Meanwhile, not as comfortable, the victory for Borussia Dortmund away against Hoffenheim. Just a one goal in the end coming in the second half. Haaland with a lovely assist to set it up. But this is the sort of game where if Borussia Dortmund are going to challenge Bayern, they need to put in these sort of performances and get in these sort of results.
Good point. And if you think of it, Bayern Munich went to Hoffenheim losing 4-1. And the problem, of course, with Dortmund is that the young kids, I mean, other teams, they will kind of rest players and then bring the young kids in. I mean, the key players playing for Dortmund, they are very young. And I mean, I think it's fantastic to look at Reina at the moment. He's 17. And we talked about it earlier today with some friends. And we said, it's so great that Dortmund just make a decision. This man, we're going to give him the time he needs. And we're going to give him the ball all the time. And if you look at the bench today by Dortmund, it was a fantastic bench. And I think that's Favre going into this unbelievable intense program. Oh, he will say this was a great day. As you said, Dan, this were the games where they threw away points last season. They needed to get Haaland on. They needed to get the captain on, Royce on in the 60th minute. And they kind of got the 3 points for them. So that was a good day for Dortmund today.
As you mentioned, Jan, and we talked about it earlier on in the show as well, the intense schedule that all of these big teams have with domestic games and then Champions League matches midweek, there is no rest. There's no easy matches. And for Borussia Dortmund, you look at their depth in squad, how are they going to be able to cope with this sort of intensity?
It's going to be interesting because, you know, young players, they want to play all the time. And I can imagine Erling Haaland coming back Thursday after playing 3 games for Norway, doing well, doing a lot of press stuff, doing a lot of commercial stunts as you have to do when you are with a national team. He wanted to play. Everybody wants to play football. And then you need some old heads. You need a good management to kind of find that balance. But I love the quote from Otto Rehagel. I use it often. You have to plan long term, but you have to win short term. And Favre knows that. And if you lost today against Hoffenheim, then you go to Rome on Tuesday doing Lazio, not the best confidence in the world. But I think that you saw that today as well with the young kids in there. I think Can had a very good game at the back. So did Hummels. So these old heads kind of being the teachers of these young players who play with all that kind of enthusiasm. And if you looked at the bench today of Dortmund, you see that the squad is getting broader. The problem is that all the key players are more or less young kids.
Jan Arne Fjelltoft, as always, thank you very much for your time. Let's just take a look at what all those results mean. Well, Leipzig then top of the table, 1 point clear of Bayern and Borussia Dortmund, respectively. Well, two more games for you tomorrow, both live on ESPN+. Köln taking on Eintracht Frankfurt, and it's Schalke who play host to Union Berlin. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Meanwhile, in Spain, it's not very often that both Real Madrid and Barcelona lose on the same day, but that's exactly what happened on Saturday. Real Madrid at home against Cadiz. Cadiz winning 1-0. Meanwhile, Getafe with a 1-0 victory at home against Barcelona. Ali Moreno is with us. Ali, should we start with which was the worst performance? I think that seems a good way to start this.
Sure. And if that's the case, then we'll go with Real Madrid. I thought that Real Madrid at home was as disappointing a performance as I can remember from Real Madrid. And not only the players on the field, but I think also the admission of guilt and an admission of mistake by Zinedine Zidane. When you make four substitutions at halftime, I do believe that's essentially saying, my bad, I got the selection all sorts of wrong. You're subbing out essentially just about half of your team. Now, one of those may have been because of injury to Sergio Ramos. The other three, well, players simply not playing at a high level. It really is that simple. So you make those changes looking for some sort of reaction, looking for an improvement to your game, because Cadiz, and this is no exaggeration, please, this is no exaggeration. I know we're prone to hyperbole in this show at times. This is not it. Within 15 minutes of the first half, Cadiz had at least four quality chances, besides scoring the goal on the 16th minute. And so, therefore, if it hadn't been because Negredo missed a couple, Lozano missed a couple, this game should have been 3-4-0, and clearly so by halftime. Real Madrid look not only average, they look like an average team trending towards poor. And there was a little bit improvement, marginal improvement in the second half, but not enough. And Cadiz, in the end, they get 3 points that they fully, fully deserve.
Real Madrid first half looked old, Ali. They looked old and not up for it.
Yeah, and really lacking any sort of emotion, of energy or reaction. You may think, okay, if you didn't know these teams and you just show up and you're watching the game, you may have thought that the team in yellow, Cadiz, was Real Madrid, playing at home, creating chances with all sorts of combinations, long balls over the top, combinations underneath, people getting in behind, showing to the ball, and the other team just reacting late to everything. You may have thought that Cadiz was Real Madrid. No, well, that wasn't the case. That was not the case. Cadiz was, in honestly, in the first 20 minutes of the game, it was like men against boys. And I thought to myself, well, what is this? Where did this come from? Real Madrid and their lack of organization and the lack of reaction. Because once you give up one or two chances early on in the game, you may have thought, you know what? Okay, all right, no, we may have underestimated this team. Now it's time to play. There wasn't any of that. There was none of that from Real Madrid. Maybe after halftime, as I said, marginally better, but that was about it. Nothing from Real Madrid that you can hang on to and say, you know what, this is going to be a good team. They were lacking in all sorts of creativity up top. They were defending very poorly out of the midfield, defending very poorly out of 1v1 situations in the back line, all sorts of time and space for Lozano to run in behind and Sergio Ramos just looking at him. Sergio Ramos, incidentally, should have been thrown out of this game 25, 30 minutes in. To me, everything about this performance is one of those, if you're seeing an incident, Real Madrid, you just go, what in the world was that?
Meanwhile, the only one bright thing for Real Madrid is Barcelona losing, and they were a little bit the other way around. First half, they're okay. You expected them to kick on in the second half. They didn't. They just went, whoom, downhill quick.
And I think the clear message that we saw from Barcelona today is how fragile this team is mentally at this point, where things were going well in the first half. And we are, okay, it's difficult to play against Getafe because they make it into a physical battle and everything is about a 50-50 challenge, but we're going to play through them. And eventually we're going to break through. And there's a nice little ball that Pedri plays to Griezmann in the first half, about 30 minutes in, where Griezmann should have scored. Which, by the way, if you're Antoine Griezmann, have you spent the week talking about how great it is to play in your position and Didier Deschamps does that for you for France, and after you score a goal against Croatia, you're all full of confidence, so much so that you're running your mouth? Well, you better put away the chances that are in front of you. He did not. Getafe stayed alive in the game. Came second half, and Getafe scores that penalty kick. And Barcelona were just kind of like, well, that's it. We got nothing. There's not much that we can provide now. And Getafe is just going to kick us around all over the field, and we're not going to react. We have nothing for you. Psychologically, mentally, this team just kind of checked out, and it didn't really feel like this team was ever going to come back in this game. There were some desperation attempts in the last few minutes of the game, and that's it. Lionel Messi, very quiet. Antoine Griezmann, well, as we have come to expect nowadays for Barcelona, unimpactful and underwhelming in his performances. Dembele was horrendous throughout the first half. In the early part of the second half, he gets taken off. Ansu Fati comes on a little bit more active, but not enough. And then you start thinking, okay, where are the changes going to come? Where's the change of energy going to come from? And you're thinking maybe a guy like Ricky Puig can provide that for you, but not when you put him in the 87th minute. No. And so at that point, it was a little too late for everybody. And Barcelona, in the end, a 1-0 defeat that is disappointing on two levels. Not only are you giving away 3 points, but also the fact that Real Madrid lost and you missed out on an opportunity. But I think even deeper is the fact that you did not show any sort of fight, any sort of reaction, any sort of, you know what, we are Barcelona. How we show that competitive pride and we go to Getafe and we match that intensity and we try to get back in this game. There was none of that from Barcelona.
Ali Moreno, as always, thank you very much. Next weekend, let's not forget, it's the first Clásico of the season, Barca against Real Madrid. And it's Real Madrid who remain top of the table despite that defeat. Up there in second and third, Getafe and Cadiz. Meanwhile, big news today regarding MLS. There will be no Supporters Shield awarded this year, but plenty of action for you tomorrow night. No less than 8 matches, all starting with Columbus Crew taking on NYCFC. That's at 6 p.m. All these games available on ESPN+. Plus, just a reminder, one game on Monday as the Revs take on the Philadelphia Union. Well, that's it then. That brings us to the end of today's frantic show. A big thank you to Jan, to Gab, and to Ali. Stay tuned, though. Frank and Shaq are with you next, answering your tweets on Extra Time. Welcome into Extra Time. Thank you very much. We've got your mouth, Shaka, for your tweets.
I don't know. I got to spend my time.
Oh, man.
Don't know what's going on.
We don't want to know. We don't want to know.
Right. No, we don't. Boys, do you wish that VAR and other technologies were available during your playing days? Oh, good question, Frank.
Yes, definitely. I'm against injustice, and I think referees were my enemies, and I so many times say to the ref to go back home that will sort out the problem better than if he is in the middle of the field. So yes, I would have loved that because I couldn't stand, you know, strikers falling for nothing, and I saw that so many times during my career. So yes.
Shaka?
I could think of a couple of times against Chelsea that VAR would have been useful.
Oh.
I've never seen somebody go over as easily as Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank. And Frank knows, Jimmy Floyd, I wish I had VAR whenever we played Chelsea. That's it.
Yeah.
If you give me that,
yeah,
I'm
yeah. And what about your teammate David Ginola? Huh? What about your teammate never. David Ginola? You never complain about him falling
never,
all the time?
Never. I've never even seen Ginola fall over.
Every time you have a chance to have a go at David Ginola, you bring him up, Frank. Poor guy. He's your nemesis.
Because he was my teammate, and then I know him by heart. And on top of it, he's so handsome that of course I have to hammer him. You know, that's just to balance everything.
Right, Shaka, doesn't Lampard have to take Kepa off the first team and try to deal him in January?
Listen, I thought Caballero should have played in the absence of Mendy. But he gives Kepa a chance because he thinks maybe, you know, Kepa will take the opportunity, given that he's been on the sidelines for a couple of games, to, you know, just kind of settle down. And it kind of looked that way early on, you know. He wasn't taking chances, dealing with everything sensibly. But that second goal, I think he could have done better. Listen, Zuma left him out to dry, but... I still feel like Kepa could and should have done better. If it were up to me, I'd go with Caballero as my number two, at least for another month. Well, you know, depending on how Mendy's availability. But I'm not involving Kepa at all for at least another month.
Let's make some headlines in France
Dan,
now.
Dan, the problem is if you want to sell Kepa, you have to make sure that he plays a little bit to seduce some other clubs.
Frank, no one's going to buy Kepa. Who on earth is going to buy him?
Yeah, I know. I try to be nice.
Every time he plays, the price goes down, though.
Exactly.
I know.
It's like Shaka's Maserati with 300,000 miles on it. You know, I don't think many people are going to buy it now. That's it.
Nobody.
Should Zidane step down at the end of the season and give a chance to someone like Pochettino, Frank?
Well, he just won the title. The season just restarted. So why do you want him to step down? You know, he's a hero over there. The players love him. They have success with him. Why do you want him to step down? If it works, if he has result, he's going to stay. If he hasn't got result, don't forget, Florentino Perez will take care of him, and they will get out, he will go out like any other coaches at Real Madrid.
Frank, if you text him some advice, would he respond?
If he texts me for some advices,
no, yes, why he would, dear Frank.
Yeah?
Text him going, I saw your Real Madrid lose against Cádiz today, Zizou. Here are some tips.
I have too much respect for his job
right.
To do so.
He
will never respond me. That's
right.
The thing.
he will say,
"I'm phone, sorry.
Who's
that? Who's that?"
Exactly.
If you take Messi and Ronaldo away, has Zlatan been the best player for the last 15 to 20 years? Scored a brace today, of course, in the Milan derby.
Ooh. The last 15 to 20 years. No. Yeah. Who else has been playing that long? Playing that long?
That's all consistency, I suppose.
Mbappe was stuck in his sandbox somewhere, 2 years old, pushing a truck, Tonka truck around. Who else is Boer? Nobody else is that old.
Of the people that old who've been around, I suppose Sergio Ramos has been around a long time, yeah, and he's won everything. But, and he's done it week in week, but it's not quite
Sergio Ramos, Zanetti. Yeah. I mean, you can name a few who have been absolutely fantastic and very consistent for more than a decade. So, no, I don't think Zlatan. I love Zlatan. He's an example of work, of also how to speak in front of the media and how to score goals. But no. Not one of the best. No.
Wow, Frank. Quite quickly dismissive.
I'm just saying, if I had to choose between Zanetti, Sergio Ramos, and Zlatan, I am picking my team on the playground, and I've got first pick, and those three are in the line, I'm going with Zlatan.
No, I will pick Sergio Ramos. I mean, you know how much I'm fond of Zlatan. I like the character, I like the player, and I think one of these best goals, and the best goal I ever seen in my life, is when he was playing for Ajax and dribbled everybody in the 16-yard box. But really, Sergio Ramos, a leader everywhere, a wire, he can even score goals. I think he scored more than 130 goals in his career. No, Sergio Ramos, first choice for me.
Let me call Steve Nicol to see what he says.
Okay, I'm dead.
I win easy.
Why is Daniel James getting starts ahead of Van der Beek? It does seem weird. What's Van der Beek done to upset Ollie?
We don't know.
I don't know.
Good question. That's insane.
Chaka?
You buy a player,
yeah,
and you don't play him. Next question.
Next question. Right. What's the most shocking?
I don't understand it. Listen. Oh. Sorry. I'm just. if you playing against a team like Newcastle, there's absolutely no reason why Van der Beek starts on the bench and you need protective cover like of Daniel James on the park against the Newcastle who. Well, don't even get me started on Newcastle today. That's a whole other rant. But it makes absolutely no sense.
What's the most shocking?
Stop laughing. Don't forget. Newcastle was terrible.
No, because I just worry about Frank's going to mention bribery again and get us into trouble with ESPN.
No. Yeah. I just want to mention to every viewers that we have today, and there are many, that behind Shaka's head is always Newcastle frame.
Yeah.
So it's why he doesn't want to talk about Newcastle today.
Okay, right. Listen.
It's coming down tomorrow.
Okay, all right. Right, Shaka. Okay, listen carefully. Shaka, what is the most shocking thing that you've seen a teammate or opponent get away with on the field?
Ooh.
I feel like a Dicanio story is coming up.
I can't think of anything on the field. Get away with on the field? Man, I have no idea.
Viva, anything? That's,
I've never even given that any thought.
No? Well, if you don't know, Frank won't know. Frank?
I think I remember Frank Sinclair scoring a goal and putting his shorts down.
Oh!
And getting banned for 3 games, I think, because he celebrated putting his shorts on his knee.
Was he in his...
For no reason.
Was it just his shorts or his knickers as well? Was it just...
No, hopefully for everybody was just his shorts.
Right, that's good to know.
Yeah, but it was enough to upset the PFA, so I think he had 2 or 3 games banned.
Shaka, Frank, what was your celebration when you scored? Did you have one? Did you think about it at all?
No, we didn't have a celebration at the time. I think it was mostly Thierry Henry going to the corner and getting the flag. But when I scored goal, I was just happy.
Yeah.
I wasn't preparing a celebration. Never.
Why didn't you ask me that question, Dan? Why did you just
What would you be celebrating, Shaka? Getting up in the morning?
Well, I'll have you know, Dan, I was about to score and let Anton Ferdinand score because he needed the goal more than me.
Yes, yep, I've seen that.
I remember that very well.
Shaka, this is where you do not leave the ground, such is your leap. You're like
no,
the defense.
I draw the defense with a cleverly disguised run and jump.
Okay, final
That's
question.
That's what happened.
Does Stefano Pioli look more like Frank than Frank himself? Frank, it's gone dark behind you, just to give more of a Pioli look.
No, all done, all done. Up, voila.
There we go.
Almost.
Perfect.
Voila.
What do you think, so, Frank?
Pioli?
Yeah.
And some guy.
Yes.
Fantastic. Good looking guy.
Better looking than you.
I love him. Yeah, a little bit older than me.
Yes.
People will judge, but looking great.
Yes.
Love him.
Do you get mistaken for a lot of people, Frank, given your looks?
Yeah, Watson. And I'm very offended when people call me Fabien Barthez. And I always say, are you kidding me? I say, are you kidding me? Fabien Barthez is ugly, so don't start with that.
where is Fabien Barthez now, Frank?
He lives in close to Spain, between on the border of Spain and France, not too far from Toulouse. And he's a car driver. He did the event 24 Hours Le Mans. He's a very good car driver. Whoa. Does very well. And yeah. And you know what? People, they say that I look like the guy from Lost, Terry O'Quinn, who is like 70 years old now. So.
Oh, that's your future.
Doesn't help. Gab. When you say that to me, doesn't help.
Hey, Shaka.
Doesn't bring anything to me, you know?
Shaka, did you see those acting skills? Car driver. Woof. Years in the theatre. Years in the theatre.
Well done. I know, it's on the other side. Does it depend if you're in England or if you're...
Shaka, where are we? What are we talking about? Pioli. Does he look like Frank?
He does.
Yes.
I think Frank's better looking, though. I think Frank has got him on the catwalk.
Really? Who's better looking, Ginola or
Shaka? Yeah.
Oh. Oh, Ginola. Yeah, Ginola.
Do you see my acting right now?
Yes, I see it.
I can't
see your acting.
The guy
probably for the best.
Oh.
You know, I was ready to buy you Maserati, but you can keep it now.
Wow, take that, Shaq.
You don't want to downgrade, Frank. That's what it is.
Yeah, I know.
Downgraded from a Bentley to a Maserati is like Ginola to LeBeouf.
That's what it is.
Okay. Right, that's enough of this. Oh. This nonsense. We will be back tomorrow for more. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Until then, goodbye.
I don't have a Maserati either, by the way.
What? Shut up, Shaq. Stop lying.
Oh, liar.
Exactly.
Just saying.
Yeah.
I don't. I drive a Ford Fusion Hybrid.
No, he doesn't. I'm
thinking about the planet.
I'm trying to be a man of the people.
No, don't insult yourself.
Thinking about the planet.